Welcome back, June 1st, 2021. Can we not leave the children alone? I mean, must we recruit them to our causes at all costs, including their childhood, never mind their mental and social development? From the Federalist, item, an exclusive New York City high school hired an educator to teach students about pornography, and it did not go over well with parents. Columbia Grammar and Prep on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, an institution whose price tag of about $47,000, held a sexuality workshop for students in the junior class. Parents were not made aware of the training, and students were misinformed about the explicit content. One student told the New York Post he thought it was, quote, just going to be about condoms or birth control, close quote. On the contrary, the training was actually called, quote, pornography literacy, an intersectional focus on mainstream porn, close quote. It was taught by Justine Eng Fonte, the director of health and wellness at the Dalton School nearby. Hold that thought. The training was delivered to 120 students last month, discussing the following topics. Three big male vulnerabilities. I'm not going to repeat them. I don't feel comfortable having my voice on tape saying the rest of these topics. Perhaps you can not delve too deeply into your imagination to know that they are crude. The students said we were all like, what? Who thought the training was a complete waste of time. Quote, everyone was texting each other. What the hell is this? It's stupid. Why are we watching porn? The worst part of it was that it took place not long before the AP tests, and I had to miss both my AP classes for this, close quote. Sounds to me like the students should be in charge of the teachers here. But before we leave that story, that Dalton school that was mentioned, $55,000 a year, it's in the news today as well, as is Eng Fonte. Item, parents at the posh Dalton School got wind of their first graders being taught sexual education lessons that included masturbation. The Post viewed video from a cartoon Fonte used in one of her classes for six-year-olds, showing little kids talking about, well, words that we don't really hear on radio. I'm not going to say those either. But it involves all kinds of physical interaction with six-year-olds. Let me just leave that alone for the time being. Item, a prominent American cereal company has partnered with an LGBTQ advocacy group to create a special cereal packaged in a box encouraging children to choose their own pronouns. Kellogg's, the parent company of brands such as Apple Jacks and Fruit Loops, unveiled its Together with Pride campaign in partnership with the GLAAD organization last week. The campaign, which has adopted the slogan, boxes are for cereal, not people, will go until November of this year and rests on the premise that, quote, no matter who you are, who you love, or what your pronouns are, you're too awesome to fit into a box, close quote. Fruit Loops eaters are going to now asking what their parents, what it means, what pronouns we are. The Michigan-based company noted on its Instagram page that for every box of Together with Pride cereal sold, it will donate $3 to GLAAD. Originally founded as the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD promotes LGBTQ issues in the media now. And GLAAD, just so you know, by the way, is not just about gay rights or LGBTQ as it was originally founded. If you go to the GLAAD page, and you can get all kinds of resources there on changing your child's sex. So they're into that too. Their annual report brags of their work with Kellogg's, sending children and parents to their website of choice to teach children and parents about how children can change their gender. Are you familiar with the children's show Blue's Clues on Nickelodeon? You know it, Bill? Blue's Clues? Good thing you don't. It's a long-running preschool TV show that has been on Nickelodeon Junior since the 90s. Blue's Clues became the highest-rated show for preschoolers on American television and was critical to Nickelodeon's growth. According to Wikipedia, the lyrics of its Pride Month song, which appear to be sung by a cartoon drag queen, include the following. Quote, this family has two mommies. They love each other so proudly. This family has two daddies. They love each other so proudly. These babies are non-binary. They love each other so proudly. Close quote. Why are we teaching six-year-olds non-binary as the vocabulary word of their day or year or life? Then, of course, we have all the coursework trying to teach children, preschoolers, and kindergartners about race. Ibram Kendi, who writes, quote, the only remedy to racist discrimination is anti-racist discrimination. The only remedy to past discrimination is present discrimination. The only remedy to present discrimination is future discrimination. He is the, close quote, he is the leading scholar the U.S. Department of Education is using to help the department enshrine critical race theory into our nation's school. As I ask, have we not agitated and tortured our children quite enough? This was the question I was raising earlier in the year, having read there is now a Netflix special aimed at toddlers in preschool, produced by Ibram Kendi. In Kendi's book version of what Netflix is putting together, Anti-Racist Baby, it's titled, toddlers are encouraged to shout, quote, there's nothing wrong with the people, celebrate our differences, knock down the stack of cultural blocks, confess when being racist, grow to be an anti-racist, believe we shall overcome racism, close quote. Toddlers. Three-year-olds. Knock down the stack of cultural blocks. Now, the first thing that comes to mind is why a child would need to be taught anti-racism in the first place. Are children naturally born thinking in terms of race? Or rather, are efforts like this geared toward getting them to think in terms of race? If anyone needs help here, the answer is the second. It's getting children to think in terms of race. As Rogers and Hammerstein instructed years ago, you've got to be taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are six or seven or eight to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You have to be taught to hate. And that's what we're doing, teaching to hate. I learned of this project right after I learned of the BLM curriculum taking place in schools last year. One of the school districts is deploying a 13-point curriculum for its students, no doubt replicated elsewhere. And among those 13 points, quote, we are committed to dismantling the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts and that requires them to mother in private even as they participate in justice work. Black villages, we are committed to disrupting the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, and especially our children to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. Unapologetically black, we are unapologetically black in our positioning, in affirming that black lives matter. We need not qualify our position. This is middle school. Note in reverse order that last one. We need not qualify our position. No discussion, no debate, no questioning as to if any of this is good pedagogy, much less good political practice or philosophy. It's mandated or coerced. It's an article of faith that must be confessed, and no need to qualify, including, quote, the disrupting of the Western prescribed nuclear family structure, close quote. Why debate the good or import of a two-parent family? It must be disrupted. Why? And why in the name of Black Lives Mattering does it need to be disrupted? Are less two-parent families a good thing for black lives or any lives in this country? Only if one is a Marxist, divorced from all reality, where the worse things are, the better they are for revolutionary purposes. So what are we doing to our children, from toddlers to teens, from toddlers being instructed in complex race theory to teen Vogue promoting the virtues of communism to the Cartoon Network promoting the virtues of transgenderism? Plato in his Republic put it this way, quote, shall we just carelessly allow children to hear any casual tells which may may be devised by casual persons, and to receive into their minds ideas for the most part the very opposite of those which we should wish them to have when they are grown up? We cannot. Anything received into the mind at that age is likely to become more indelible and unalterable, and therefore it is most important that the tales which the young first hear should be models of virtuous thought. Then will our youth dwell in a land of health, amid fair sights and sounds, and receive the good in everything, and beauty. The affluence of fair works shall flow into the eye and ear like a health-giving breeze from a purer region, and indelibly draw the soul from the earliest years into likeness and sympathy with the beauty of reason. There is no nobler training than that. Now, when you think about that noble training, I think it's worth pointing out that we actually need to be taught that ourselves. I think I know why we need to be instructed in this, and it goes back to Roger Scruton. All the best things we have when abused will cause bad things to happen. You can plant into a child good as much as you can plant into a child bad. You can implant the beauty of reason, and you can implant the ugliness of passion and bad passion. When Allen Ginsberg told Norman Podhoretz, as you've heard me say, we'll get you through your children, he understood conservatives better than we do. Leo Strauss wrote that liberal education is the liberation from vulgarity. The Greeks had a beautiful word for vulgarity. They called it aporokalia, lack of experience in things beautiful. Lack of experience in things beautiful. Liberal education supplies us with experience in things beautiful, he wrote. Is that what we're doing now? Or, as I ask again, are we training in the experience of things ugly? An ugly society can be made here. Let's not forget it. Beauty and things beautiful need to be nurtured. Freedom is such a beautiful thing. So is childhood. Must we end both in the name of someone's version of progress? I should hope not. But that's where we are headed. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I hope you all had a meaningful weekend. It's not good to say have a good Memorial Day. You want to say have a meaningful Memorial Day or some variant of emotional import. After all, we are remembering those who gave their lives in defending our ability to speak today. I had a great holiday, and we did a thing yesterday. Are you familiar with Taps Across America, Bill? At 3 p.m., wherever your 3 p.m. is, you're supposed to play taps, if you play taps, so that the whole country. Anyway, we did that. We did it at my place and with a group of people. Hugh Hallman was there. He'll be with us later. He helped. Of course, his dad was a great taps player, too, trumpet player. Anyway, I did have a very good and memorable Memorial Day, which is what, you know, these holidays in the air, Memorial Day, then we'll get to July 4th. You know, these holidays, they bring with them such an, I was going to say an emotional tug, but tug doesn't seem to be quite strong enough. They carry an extra weight right now, don't they? Given the high cultural, what's the phrase and word I want? The high cultural anti-American morass and themes and cultural filters we've all been put through, especially over the last couple of years, year and a half to 2 years. It brings an extra weight where we're celebrating men and women who died in service to the defense of this country and Constitution when we not just rewrite the Constitution, but declare it base and ugly and unesteemable and not worthy of celebration but condemnation, where we take our revolutionary spirit on behalf of human right and nature and say, no, that was not our founding. Our founding was not in 1776, but an entire century before. And not based on freedom and equality, but human misery and bondage. Don't these holidays carry an extra weight in that culture? Don't they seem to? Don't they seem to be a little more meaningful and a little more lachrymose? I hate to say it. A little sadder, a little more sad. Sad in the sense that we almost feel it's a subversive activity to celebrate America. Am I alone in thinking this way? Bill, do you ever get that way? Am I wrong? Do people almost feel, do you sense that people feel like their celebration of this country, flags or the holidays that commemorate it, that they're like a political minority? Do you get the sense that people feel that way about themselves, that to show patriotism right now is almost a subversive activity? Do you sense that there is that? I'm not making this up, right? That's what's so heavy about this. I wonder if the audience feels that too. So where you might have driven down a main street in a major city 20 or 30 years ago and thought nothing of all the American flags, today you may see one in a neighborhood or two and you think nothing of it as well, unless it's your house with that one or two on it. I happen to be the only house on my block with a flag. Just happens to be the case. And putting it up made us feel good, of course, of course. But I have to tell you, being the only one there makes it feel as if we are the standouts. Now, I would never mandate someone have to do it, but it's as if standing up for this country has become not just down market, but subversive, not just passé, but almost a push against the culture. And how could it be that we have a culture that pushes against the notion that this thing called America is something worthy of celebration? I didn't mean to get off on this. I'm just thinking it through out loud as I now speak about this. These holidays do carry that extra weight for these reasons, don't they? They tug on us. They pull on us. They drag on us a little bit more with a little more sadness than usual. Are we more sad, Bill? Were you more sad this Memorial Day and last than you were 2 years ago? Was there an element of something missing, an element of, if not sadness, depression? I'm not making this up, right? Yeah. Yeah. And you're younger than me, but you've sensed it even in your generation, right? You're what, about 10 years younger than me? Are you? Yeah. Right. So you've sensed it even in your generation, the loss. Here's the worry. This is kind of metaphysical, but the worry is, it's the biggest part of the problem. The worry is 10 years below you and younger, they won't know that loss. This is their new normal. That's the worry. This is their new normal. The task before us is to change that normal, but that's what explains the pull and weight. Doesn't it? A little? Am I alone? Let me know what you think about this. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. And 34 past the hour means it's time for our culture and economy update with the great John Dombrowski, who is the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates. GrandCanyonPlanning.com is his website. John, I hope you had a really memorable and meaningful Memorial Day.
I did. It was wonderful. And I think it was a good time for us to reflect on all of the sacrifices that were made for those out there in the military. And we appreciate everything that they do for us.
And I appreciate what you do to help give them voice here, John. I wanted to talk to you on the economy front about the new tax rates that we're learning more about.
Right.
Before I do, we do call this culture and economy.
Uh-huh.
And either you're so much more hipper than I am, John. And one way to know that is I'm using the phrase hip. Which is not a phrase you would use. But what did you say you wanted to talk about? Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck? What?
What? What? You saw the little LOL after that,
I did
you?
Not.
Oh, come on.
I don't have...
apparently, Jennifer Lopez is back with Ben Affleck. I just can't even believe it.
I didn't even know they were apart. There you go. That's why you're hipper than I am.
Awful. I mean, seriously. No.
Okay. Talk to me. All right. That's our culture segment for today. We'll do better tomorrow, folks. But economy, that's what John knows. Economics. Yeah. Talk to me about this new proposed top tax rate of 39.6. And really, the cap gains is interesting too, J.D.
Yeah, I think that's probably a bigger issue than the rise in. But here's the thing with the current tax rates, the top marginal income tax rate currently right now is 37%, Seth, for those, making in excess of $400,000. Now, there is the new proposed is going to be 39.6. Now, they lowered the amount of income. So it's going to be a lower amount of income for the threshold, and it's going to be a higher tax rate. And this is really going to affect a lot more people than you would think as far as their income tax rates. But then on top of that, really, let's focus on the cap gains rate, because this is 43.4%, which is even higher than the proposed highest income tax rate. Now, that rate, they're saying, is going to be on incomes over $1 million.
Right.
But they're also talking about this, Seth, being not only on the capital gains tax rates, but on dividends. So a lot of stocks pay dividends.
Right, right. And retirees take it for income, right?
Exactly. So even if you're not going to sell a stock position, you still could be in this tax rate for your dividend income. So this is a big deal. And then on the other side of this, I talk to a lot of clients who are really concerned about this possibly affecting them. But if you've got most or the majority of your money invested in retirement accounts, remember that retirement accounts are not subjected to capital gains tax rates. They're subjected to ordinary income tax rates because you've never paid any tax on those retirement accounts. They've all been deferred for all these years. So you're going to see people who have done very well with their investments. They've done very well saving money and putting money into their retirement accounts, and they're going to be potentially subjected to a higher tax rate if something like this law goes through. A lot more people will be affected by it than we think.
Yeah, I think that's right. And capital gains, it's an odd thing because every time we cut them, the economy goes upwards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is not one that's really open to much economic debate. It's really about political will, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it was 20% for long-term capital gains tax rates with a 3.8% Medicare surtax.
Right.
So it was 23.8. Now talking about 43.4. You're talking about almost doubling this income tax or this capital gains tax rate, which would be devastating. I don't know what the long-term effect would be, but initially I know the short-term effect would be a lot of individuals trying to, make adjustments to portfolios to try to, adjust what they currently hold and possibly make decisions on holding a lot longer, not selling.
Yep.
And if they're talking about not giving the step up in cost basis at death, well, then they're really taking away a lot of the benefits for people to even invest in these types of investments, which could hurt overall the values of these investments.
This is such an important thing. I mean, we talk about the economy with regard to the debt that the young are going to have to inherit. I don't think we spend enough time thinking about, in an age where we're clearly able to think about them when it comes to the issue of physical health and virus, I don't think our economics think enough about them when it comes to this very matter and how a lot of people draw income in their sunset years, John. But let's talk more about it. And maybe tomorrow let's talk about the Arizona flat tax plan a little bit too and what that means for everyone. John Dombrowski, God bless you, sir. You have a thing or two to say, I know.
Yep, Securities and Advisory Services offered through Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA SIPC and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Check out the Word on Wealth Saturday morning at 7 a.m.
Right here on 960. And I'm Seth, 602-508-0960. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's time to not only think about, but to perhaps even rethink air conditioning in Arizona. Chris Funk at Cool Touch Air Conditioning is letting you in on a little secret in the industry, which is that almost every air conditioner in the valley is too big by design. And that's because we all have to compensate for really hot days, 110, 115 degree heat. So most AC units are like a light switch, either all on or all off. think about a dimmer switch for that AC unit, and that would allow you to automatically use just the right percentage of air conditioning, like a dimmer switch on a light. Designed to do two things, the most comfortable living environment and biggest savings on those painfully high and surprising utility bills. Cool Touch will eliminate the pain and the surprise, and with fantastic customer service, too. That's why I and all my friends use Cool Touch. The future of air conditioning is here, and Cool Touch is charting it. For a limited time, Cool Touch is also offering a $2,000 rebate on this system. Call my friends at Cool Touch at 623-734-1932. That's 623-734-1932. Or visit them at cooltouchac.com. That's cooltouchac.com. Jim is in Phoenix. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Seth. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk. Nice to hear from you, sir.
I wanted to comment on your observation regarding it feeling like a subversive if you fly the flag. I've actually had a little bit of that going on for a while now. I'm one of two individuals in my neighborhood who fly the flag, and it occurs to me I also have the front window by my door. I also have back the blue and a symbol for the missing in actions and the NRA. It occurred to me that if the left-wing thugs want to select a target, they'd have no trouble finding one here.
Right. That's part and parcel of it, actually. Showing your patriotism to those who otherwise would think a second time about it. You bet.
Sure. And, of course, on a personal note, this Memorial Day was a particular impact for me and my family personally. You may recall a little over a year ago I called in and described the experience of burying my Navy veteran son when we were in the absolute throes peak of the insane hysteria over COVID. And
Jim, it was one of the most emotional calls I can remember in my radio career. And if I'm not mistaken, as a result, probably had more people praying for you and your son than they would have otherwise, my guess.
Well, and their prayers were felt, and I thank them, and God bless them for doing so. And
well, thank you for sharing the story and giving us a good reason to pray for something important.
Well, thank you. We're doing okay.
Good. And it's unfair for me to even ask it, Jim, vis-a-vis your son, although I guess it's part and parcel of the entire cultural feeling I'm trying to grasp or describe COVID and its remedial measures that were taken against it, that these holidays, these memorials, these days, these July 4th type holidays, President's Day or what used to be known as Washington and Lincoln's birthday, these things, they come a little sadder now, don't they? I mean, and the reason it's unfair for me to ask is you obviously also have extra reason beyond any human's ability to measure with words to have these feelings after your son's passing. But Jim, for people who have long never thought twice about putting up a flag or celebrating a national holiday, it's not that they're thinking twice. I just think they're thinking heavier about it in a way that's not right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's part and parcel with the, I know Trump supporters. I had a Trump sign in my yard. There was one other one in the neighborhood. And I know other Trump supporters who would not put a sign in their yard.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's a sad state of affairs.
Well, it's the same thing because the left made it so. See, that's what's so darn interesting. Once upon a time, I would understand someone saying in a given neighborhood or whatever, oh, I don't know, I don't feel quite comfortable putting my politics on my yard. I can appreciate that for whatever number of reasons or professions you may be in. I could get that. Certainly I do.
Sure.
But when the politics becomes love of the country itself, when it becomes a flag and not an R or a D, when it's about celebrating the country's greatness itself. See, this is what the left has done. They have made a mockery of patriotism, and they have made a political fetish of it. That is to say, if you love your country, you're a Republican. And if you think America's great, you're a Republican. Well, I'm old enough to remember when Democrats used to think that, too, and shame on them for not.
Absolutely. And I'm old enough to remember that, too. I have a friend who's a Democrat. He's an old-fashioned liberal, and it has escaped his notice that liberals are an endangered species. And we had some tough times over the past few months, and he reminded me that Ronald Reagan and Norman Lear were very good friends. And I said, yeah, not only that, but Tip O'Neill. And I said, dude, I'm sorry, those days are gone. The left has destroyed liberalism.
Yeah, I agree with that. So much so that as much as we thought Tip O'Neill, Jim, was the political enemy at the time, political opponent at the time, better phrase, the Nancy Pelosi of the time. The difference between Nancy Pelosi's politics and Tip O'Neill's politics are probably the equivalent, probably the equivalent of the difference between Richard Nixon's politics and Jimmy Carter's. I mean, it's just a different animal altogether. What we wouldn't do for a Tip O'Neill Democratic Party right now.
Right on, right on.
I would take a Tip O'Neill Democratic Party. You know why? Here's what that party would say. That party would say, I think you're giving a little too much to the Pentagon and not enough to social services. So what we'll do is we'll give you the money you want for the Pentagon. Oh, we'll give them a 3% bump, but we're going to give social services a 10% bump. And we're going to fight you on tax cuts, but not so hard because we're getting the spending we want in our social services. And, oh, come July 4th, yeah, we'll see you at the Hatch Cell in Boston celebrating the greatness of this country, one and all. That's what the Democrats of that time, Tip O'Neill, would have been about. It would not have been about have a happy Memorial Day, giggle, giggle, gaggle, gaggle, and that to show patriotism you must wear a mask, and if you do, then perhaps we'll allow you to have 4th of July celebrations. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Jeff is in Phoenix. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Seth, how's it going?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm fabulous, fabulous. Hey, just a couple of notes here. Memorial Day means a lot to me, always has and always will. What I find fascinating, just to tell you a quick story, my father got his diploma, and a few days later got his draft notice, and when in 6 months he was on the first wave of Marines in Iwo Jima.
Wow.
So, and the fact that my father came back and had me and our family and everything, I'm very appreciative.
Similar story to my family, yeah. My dad was in Okinawa, yeah.
There you go. So all the people out there, even anybody that puts their life on the line every single day and they have no idea if they're going to come home, it amazes me that people aren't appreciative of these people.
No kidding.
Everybody says walk a mile in my shoes. Most of these people have first world problems. It's ridiculous. You know, you talk about people and the flag, and there's a few people in my neighborhood that fly flags, but I fly that flag very proudly, and I love the fact that there's people. I see people drop out because I know who can I trust and who can I trust. Because
if you had an accident, God forbid, or an emergency, God forbid, and you saw two houses next to each other, one with an American flag and one not, we all know which one you're running to.
Well, I know where I'm going.
Yeah,
it's going to be human. It's going to be my nature to go to that.
Of course. Of course. Because it shows someone's willing to care an extra measure about people who cared a great deal with extra measures.
Well, you wonder why there's less and less people doing it. And in my opinion, there's three things. It's either emotions have taken over, and that's how they vote, and they vote emotionally, but they vote for things not like they live, because most white liberals live conservative lives, but they vote for third world
This is important. Yeah, this is important. Give me two. I want to write these down and talk about them. Go ahead. One is emotional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emotional. So, and a lot of it has to do with their kid coming home from college. Like my sister is a perfect example. They believe, the kids start to tell their parents how to
of
believe.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, that's one. Give me two.
They're afraid they're being bullied by other people, and they don't want to speak out, and so they just keep quiet.
Yep.
I don't want any confrontation. I'm not going to speak up for my beliefs, and I'll just... The third is they're making money off of it. They are part of the problem, and they love the fact that people don't do it. And they're probably flying something else or trying to put their sign out that...
I want to talk a little bit more about that. That's a good outline, Jeff. A pretty good outline. But I do think there's a fourth. And the fourth is the one I want to talk about, too. I'll do it when we come back. Am I wrong, folks? Did this holiday, as the upcoming July 4th or perhaps last July 4th or Memorial Day, did it weigh a little heavier? Did it feel a little heavier, almost as if it was subversive to celebrate? Tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.